half communities that we've seen so far in the time. But one point that we have maintained is that more so than even other Chakiras that you find, there's been a tremendous loyalty for two centuries to a Chakira that was laid out by the Chassam Sofer and his Chuvis, that Shalach Manas is either to help with the Suda, as seems to be the position of the Chumas Hadeshen, or is there to make friends, which seems to be the position of the Manos HaLevi, assuming that they are indeed arguing with each other. So I'll mention a few more nachtaninas. We've suggested together, the group, we've suggested a few over the past week. Anyone else want to throw out any more before I suggest some? Any other thoughts how it might make a difference? Well, one question that many ask is, nowadays it's very popular, my shul does this also, to have a joint Shalach Manos project. So does that fulfill one's personal Shalach Manos obligation? So that was a discussion Polskin had as well. Now, first of all, as mentioned, my shul doesn't certainly obligate it to support these projects because they're major fundraisers for the shuls. But as far as your personal Shalach Manos, there's some debate. The Rebbe Sefraim has a truth about it. My friend Yashu Bush wrote an article about it, I believe, a few years ago. And there's some who assume that as far as helping with the Suda, okay, so very good. So everyone's getting this package from the joint group. So it certainly should be good as far as that's concerned. As far as making friends, so then maybe if one says, I think last week we left off on the Ksav Sofer's comment about anonymous Shalach Manos, and the assumption that it has to connect to an individual in order for it to be effective, so then maybe if it's coming from the group rather than any one specific individual, maybe it's missing something. That's a possible approach to take. I was asked this morning about the Ran, it's on the Arma Komos, that the Ran assumes that the interpretation of the Gemara of Machalfi Sudasayu, that they would trade their Suda with each other, is a fulfillment of Shalach Manos, that you have two people who don't have enough food to give Shalach Manos and still to have left over for their own Suda, so they could trade food with each other, and that way they'll accomplish both. So there are some who assume that that's more of a Manos Alevi approach, because if it's there to help with the Suda, so then what do we really accomplish by just having two people trade their food with each other and end up with the same net pool of food? Maybe it doesn't really add very much, but if the idea is we want to share goodwill, so then maybe it's a little bit more understandable. You could still say that this is a fulfillment of the Suda idea, and that's especially within the way that Sam Sofer had it, that one could say that if the whole idea is we want to make sure that people get helped out, so then essentially it's a low plug and everyone has to do it, and even if the end result is that it's not going to help very much, still we require everyone to do it, and in order to correct for those people who will be giving away all the food they have, so it's a good suggestion to have it traded with somebody so that you end up both having a meal and Shalach Manos. So I think it's sustainable to associate it with the Suda idea, but I guess it's a little bit more fluid with the Manos HaLevi's idea. So one way to really connect this to our sugyas in Yisubis, as you mentioned, one of the common elements between the Stalker sugyas that we've seen and the Gittin sugyas that we will see is the aspect of kfiya, the idea that sometimes the community, the Beis Din, can compel a fulfillment of a mitzvah, and we find that in the context of Stalker at least sometimes too. So does it make sense to compel Shalach Manos? So this was discussed by Rav Yaakov Vital Zolti. I don't know if you have too much experience with that sefer. When I was your age, this was a very popular sefer in the Yeshivas, the Mishnah Siavitz. Rav Yaakov Vital Zolti was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim until he passed away, I believe, in the early 1980s. And he has a very beautiful shiurim that has been very popular. I think now they're available again on HebrewBooks.org. When I was in Yeshiva, it was a hot commodity. It was a very popular sefer, and it sold out very quickly. And if you couldn't get it, now I think it's all on HebrewBooks.org. But the result, he has a discussion about, does it make sense to have an institution of kfiya by Shalach Manos? can shalachmanos be done through compelling someone else? So there you find that it might indeed depend on these two possibilities, because if the idea is that it's there for the purposes of tzedakah, so tzedakah, we do find kfiyah sometimes. We do find, especially in this case, where we could say that it's there to make sure everyone has enough food. So we could say the community is going to be compelled to make sure to provide enough food for everyone. But if the idea is there to show goodwill, I don't know how much you're going to impress anyone when you show up at their house with two U.S. Marshals who are with a gun to your head, and you say, I'm hereby compelled by law to offer you this gift, I hope you like it. It's probably not going to impress the person so much, and maybe if it's about creating goodwill, maybe that's not really the way to do it. Question about that? I think I'm here about to say something. So you also find similar, this is sometimes associated with the position of the Ritva that I mentioned last week, the idea that a gift that's too small for a rich person or from a rich person, something which the gift itself is not going to convey a sense of appreciation, it's not going to evoke a sense of appreciation, so there maybe that's not a real fulfillment of shalachmanos. So this might be an example of that, that if you're compelled through the marshals of the court to give this gift, it's not going to necessarily get so much of a great reaction. You also find this discussion, let's say, the tshuvas have some very creative ways of answering this, but you could maybe think of some more straightforward ways. Let's say, for example, you have a chumra in kashrus, and your friend does not have this chumra, so you have this item that you can't eat, or you have some kind of an allergy, or for whatever other reason, you cannot eat this food, so you give it to somebody else, so then, for the suda, that might be effective. They can use it for the suda. But as far as making friends, so they're going to know that this isn't something that you really could value yourself, if you can't utilize it yourself. So better you should give it to them than to throw it away, but they're not going to necessarily be too impressed. This is in the spirit of the Gemara Mechulin, which says that if you give a non-Jew, if you sell a non-Jew meat, so the meat happens to not be kosher, you have to make sure that he knows that, even though he doesn't have to keep kosher, so it doesn't matter for him. But you still have to tell him that it's not something you could have eaten, so he shouldn't give you too much credit. Otherwise, there'd be a problem of gnevas das, that if he thought that this was something you could eat, then you were giving to him anyway. So that could potentially be gnevas das. So in order to be fully honest, you have to express that it's not something you could eat, which reflects this point that the individual is just not going to be as grateful or as appreciative of something in that sense. So that being the case, you see this here also, that if it's something you can't eat, it's not going to necessarily score you so much goodwill, but perhaps it will still be effective for the suda. Hi.
Can that apply here?
Gnevas das, Gemara says very clearly, does apply for sure. The prohibition of gnevas das for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Gemara says very, very clearly. So, in any event, this idea that there are these two possibilities, so you find it in a few more places. Again, it's a very popular question, very popular chakira. And it's brought up also in terms of the question of the bracha. Why is it that we don't have a bracha on shalachmanos? So there is a famous Rashba. In general, whenever you have a mitzvah that doesn't have a bracha, and the Sfarim try to figure out why, so number one maramakom that gets quoted is the Tshuvas HaRashba. The Tshuvas HaRashba has a tshuva about tzedakah, where he seems to say the following. There's some debate that this is what he really means, but he seems to say that the reason there's no bracha on tzedakah is because we're afraid that maybe you're going to give tzedakah to someone, you'll offer tzedakah, and he's not going to receive it. He's not going to want it. Right? This is very much synergistic with the question we just left off with. Right? That's possible, theoretically, for you to give a gift to someone, to give tzedakah to someone, it may not actually be the mitzvah tzedakah. That's what we were talking about on Wednesday. So it could be they will receive it, and they're not actual tzedakah recipients, and we talked about whether that's a mitzvah or not. Or it could be they won't receive it at all. So is there a mitzvah then? That's the question. So the Rashba seems to be worried that if you're going to offer tzedakah and someone's not going to accept it, then you'll be left hanging. It's like that famous joke about the brisker, who an Arab came up to him and was about to kill him. So the brisker said, "Okay, hold on a second." He made a bracha, "Asher Hashanah Mitzvosa V'Tivanu Al Kiddush Hashem." And the Arab was so freaked out that he ran away. So the brisker ran after him and said, "Can't leave me hanging." So essentially, that's the concern, that whenever you're involved with somebody else, that you don't know that they're going to come through, so then maybe you can't make a bracha on such a mitzvah. So that's the go-to answer. That answer is always the first source. The Rashba's Tshuva, in general, is the first source that's always quoted whenever there's a question about a bracha on a mitzvah. So some of the Achronim explain that the Rama just messed up the Rashba's answer here, because you can't use the Rashba for Shalach Manas according to the Rama. Right? The Rama that we started off with 2 weeks ago, I guess, the Rama said that if you offer somebody Shalach Manas and he doesn't accept it, you're still Yotze. So it sounds like according to the Rama, there's no risk. There's nothing to depend on the other guy. You're going to be Yotze in mitzvah no matter what. Now, the truth is, that's not 100%. clear, because it could be that if he throws it back in your face, then you're not yotze. I mean, it might just be that if you actually accomplish the goodwill, he says, "Oh, thank you so much, but I don't need it, it's the thought that counts," then maybe that's all right. But it's not really clear from the Rama that there's no way that he could stop you from fulfilling the mitzvah. But let's assume it's correct. So then you don't have the Rashba's answer, so why is there no bracha on Shalach Manas? You want to suggest any answers? So why should it be no bracha on Shalach Manas if you don't have that approach to Rashba? Yeah, Morty?
If you do a little like Rashba, it says it's like a masalevi, so you make like a, I don't know if this is right, but if you make like a bracha, you guys are giving Shalach Manas, so like the guy's going to not appreciate that.
Oh, so that's how the three-day-age tshuva like that, essentially similar to what we were saying about kfir. Right, then imagine how that's going to look. So you come with a gift to someone, you say, "Hold on a second, right before I give this to you, blessed is God who has commanded me and ordered me and forced me to give you this gift, which I'm doing for only that reason. Here it is." So presumably that's not going to be so impressive either. So that's how some suggest that if you follow the Manos Halevi's approach, this whole language of mitzvah, of tzivoy, is not going to necessarily have the desired effect. Yes, sir?
It's also a derabanan, isn't it?
Yeah, we make brachas on derabanan.
And then the Gemara asks why we make the
right. And the Gemara has about Neir's Tana. The Gemara has a question, Heichan Tivanu, which is a whole discussion of itself. But practically speaking, we certainly make brachos on Shabbos candles, on Nekar Megillah, on Chanukah candles, on Tefillah Sedayim, and all these drabanans. We certainly do make brachos. So this could have been a good candidate as well. So, in addition to Morty's approach and the Sri Yesh's approach, you have a couple of other answers also. In general, like I mentioned, the Rashba is always the first marmokum that gets quoted in any mitzvah with no bracha discussion. The second marmokum that gets quoted is the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef in Siman Tav Lamed Beis and Hilchos Pesach. So the Beis Yosef talks about why is it that we don't make a bracha on bir chametz. We do make a bracha on bir chametz. Why we don't make a bracha on bittel chametz. And Beis Yosef says that we have to make it on bir chametz specifically because bittel is belayed, and you don't make a bracha on anything that takes place belayed. So there are some who want to say that if you want to say like the Manos Halevi, that really it's all about the goodwill, so the mitzvah takes place when that happens, and that's not a moment that we can define for a bracha. It's probably a little bit of a weaker approach. There is a fascinating approach which is worth coming to keeping in mind as we segue in a moment into Matanos Lavyomim, is perhaps very fundamental approach, that the Das Sofer, who certainly can be understood to follow the path of Chassam Sofer as he was another descendant of the Chassam Sofer. So the Das Sofer has a tshuva where he says if one follows the Trumas Hadeshin's approach. So essentially, what you have here is really perhaps a hybrid between Mishloach Manos and Matanos Levyonim. Or perhaps the idea is that they're both about tzedakah, and we kind of want to fudge the distinction between the two, or if there really is a distinction between the two. The point is that because we have So now we have a way to get gifts and tzedakah to people without making it overt tzedakah. And that's something we'll come back to in a few minutes. So if that's the case, so what language will we use for the bracha? We say, mitzvah shvachmanos, mitzvah shvatanos levyonim. The whole point is we're trying to blur the distinction here. And therefore he suggests, perhaps for that reason, you can't really have a bracha in any efficient way. Does that mean a question about that?
Yeah, just in general, we don't really have brachas for the other mitzvahs either, like besides Megillah.
Right, so Megillah we do.
Yeah, the other ones we don't, so right. A, why would Shachmanos be any different, and B,
so,
why can't they?
But that's Sofer, it works for both Shachmanos and Matanos Leviyonim, so you get a 2-for-1 with that one.
And the Suda also as
well. Suda is a good question, whether a Suda should have, there's some who say you don't make a bracha on a mitzvah that's not really going to help so much. It's a good question why Suda is in a different category in general. We don't have to make a bracha on Sudas Yantif, Sudas Shabbos, although at least Friday night and Yantif night we have Kiddush. Shabbos lunch we also have Kiddush. Shabbos Shabbos we don't. The interesting question, the point being that we could argue that Kiddush serves as a bracha on the meal. And the idea of the bracha should identify the meal as a mitzvah. An interesting question why we don't do that for Shabbos Shabbos. Or why don't we do that for other types of settings where, like Purim, where maybe the meal could be questioned as to whether it's a suda or not. It's an interesting question. We'll come back to that.
Can we say that they're kind of covered by the Shehecheyanu?
Shehecheyanu is true. Shehecheyanu that we say in the Megillah does cover, from a Shehecheyanu purposes, all the mitzvahs of the day. But it's not the Berachas HaMitzvah. So that is an interesting question, and we'll try to come back to that. So just, we'll make one more comment about Shalachmanis, and then we'll transition into Matanos Levyonim, and we'll continue it tomorrow. So a little bit, Al Pidar HaDrush. So there is a Gemara in Maseches Megillah on Daf Yudalit. The Gemara raises the question, what is it that the Jewish people did at that time that made them deserving of such punishment? Why are the Jews deserving of possibly being killed at the time of Purim? And the Gemara has two approaches. One approach is b'pnei shenehnu misudaso shalosa rasha, because they took part in the suda of Achashverosh, which had many problems beyond kashrus. Actually, food was kosher. There were other issues. So that was one problem. Or the other possibility is that because they bowed down to the idolatry that Haman wore on his neck. So says Rabbi Nachum Zemba. Rabbi Nachum Zemba, if you're not familiar with him, was a tremendous gaon who died in the Warsaw Ghetto. Last year we learned the first parak of Shabbos, the Sefer on the first parak of Shabbos is a classic, a modern classic. He wrote Sfarim on everything, but sadly they were mostly lost in the Holocaust, most of the Sfarim. But we have a few scattered ideas from him in addition to a few other writings. So one idea that was quoted from him is that perhaps the two reasons that we have for Shalachmanis correspond to the two reasons that we have for the potential destruction of Jewish people. That if the idea was this inappropriate Suda, so how do you correct an inappropriate Suda? With an appropriate Suda. So Sudas Purim is the tikkun for Sudas Achashverosh. So according to the Trumas Hadeshah, the purpose of Shalachmanis is to help with the Suda, so it's a tikkun for that. According to the other possibility, it's about Avodah Zarah. So how do you fix Avodah Zarah after the fact? So there's a Medrash in Parshas Tzav, which tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu declared that Gadol HaShalom, Shalom is a fantastic thing. It is concerning the Jewish people, Zman Shehem B'chabura Achas, at a time when they're all one entity, Afilu Avdu Avodah Zarah Ani Mochel Osam. Even if they were engaged in idolatry, I would still forgive them. So it seems like the tikkun for Avodah Zarah is Achdus. So if Shalachmanis accomplishes Ava V'Yachav Shalom V'Reyes, so then it is a tikkun for that as well.
Where is that? Is that Gemara?
Yudavah, Megillah, okay, so we could say a few more words about that, but let's segue, we'll dive in just in a few minutes. Let's just start the topic of Matanos Levyonim. So we know that here, as you just mentioned, so there really is very direct synergy between this sugya now and what we've been doing all the past few weeks, and what we've been doing specifically the past week. I'll mention in a few minutes, take a look also if you want, that there is a very relevant shtickle on Matanos Avyonim, on Ksubas Daf Samach Zayin by Yitzchak Zilberstein. Yitzchak Zilberstein, I think we mentioned a few times in the past, in the Sefer Chashuk Echemet, on our daf, on our sugya, has a pretty significant shtickle on Matanos Avyonim and how it ties into our Gemara. So Shach Manas was somewhat relevant, Matanos Avyonim, as you can understand, is even more relevant to what we've been talking about. So, considering that we've talked about the basic principles of tzedakah these past few weeks, so how do they apply to Matanos Avyonim? Are there differences? And why might there be differences? So just the next few minutes, so think of any points to either of those questions. Are there any differences that occur to you between Matanos Avyonim and standard tzedakah? And if so, how might you explain them?
It doesn't seem to be an obligation of Dei Masero when it comes to Matanos Avyonim.
Okay, so you say Matanos Avyonim is not addressed towards that. Which is probably true. And Matana said it's an interesting question. I wasn't thinking about that, but you're right. I mean, it's not that kind of stuck. That Matana said the only was not about I'll take care of everything that's going on in your life. It's more about, you know, addressing your avyonis, so to speak. But what else have you? Okay, so that's the most glaring one that we spoke about specifically last week. Really, the very direct synergy in literally what you're up to right now. Is that we spent some time last week talking about a chobas bidika, about when there's an obligation to check for the worthiness of the recipient. And on Purim, so we don't have such an obligation. On Purim, we say that you should give much more liberally. Now, how might you explain that? Why should that be true? Are you?
Because we... are so giving on Purim that we automatically give. We don't even.
So it's a question of degree. You're saying that we're just so more generous on Purim than we are the rest of the year. So therefore, the trade-off between giving and caution emphasizes giving more.
Right.
Which is interesting. The problem is, and there's a lot to be said about that. We could say that it's simply a qualitative distinction or quantitative distinction, or simply a matter of degree, that this is a classic mitzvah of tzedakah, just intensified on Purim. But we also did see that part of tzedakah is a responsibility. So even if we're very generous, why should we not be responsible at the same time? Samir?
Maybe there's an extra aspect of the giver over here.
Okay.
A couple of people said there's like idea of simcha.
Okay, so where do you see that idea? It's Ritva.
Yeah.
Right, so some of the Rishonim have such an idea. The Ritva probably most explicitly, you probably saw this in the Rambam also, the way the Rambam phrases things. That it could be that this is not a mitzvah of tzedakah, but that this is an expression of simcha, which is a truly beautiful idea that we know the Rambam in a couple places. He says it here, but it's consistent with the idea that we find elsewhere, that the Rambam writes when he talks about Simchas Yontif, that Simchas Yontif is not genuine. If you have someone who says, I'll have a huge meal on Yontif, but Aniyim will have no place at my table, I'm going to close them off. So then the Rambam says, Ein zeh simchas mitzvah, ela simchas kreiso. This is just a joy of his stomach. It's not a joy of Yontif at all. So we find an idea throughout the Rambam, and he expresses it here also, that a major reflection of simcha is that it goes outward. That not only do you enjoy, but that you make sure that the needy enjoy. So to give is an expression of simcha. So maybe that's what we're talking about on Purim also. Purim, you should be happy, so you should give to others. And therefore, it's not the same standard as tzedakah. So when it comes to tzedakah, we're very careful. When it comes to Matanos Avyonim, it's more about give, 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 and ask questions later, if ever. So that may possibly be a difference, and the explanation of the difference. Can anyone think of any other possible differences? All right, so I'll let you think about that a little bit. We'll continue with that tomorrow. And so we'll, like we said before, we'll try to finish all those points tomorrow and Tuesday, and we'll figure out what our story is in terms of Wednesday. Just to essentially review what we spoke about today. So we talked about how the Chakira of the Sam Sofer could possibly apply to the question of Shutfus, how it could apply to the question of Shalchmanis, what you can use and your recipient can use, the question of Kfiyah, and the question of Bracha, why is there no Bracha? The Rashba's answer might seemingly not apply here. Maybe the Beis Yosef's answer would apply. Maybe like Kfiya, that the Bracha also is going to have a sense of compulsion and that's not going to be so impressive. Or maybe the idea like the Das Sofer that we specifically want to blur the distinction between Matanis Avionim and Shalachmanis. And we mentioned the approach of Menachem Zemba, that the Gemara has these two possibilities of why it is that the Jews were a chayiv in destruction. And Menachem Zemba thought they paralleled the two reasons for Shalachmanis. And then we started talking about Matanis Avionim, and we asked whether it's really a mitzvah of stock or are there differences. So an interesting point that Aryeh made about De Machzora really being a different category, and I then noted the certainly express halacha that we find in Matanis Avionim that we don't ask too many questions, which is a direct conflict with the sugya we were immediately just doing last week about stock in general, prompting the possibility that maybe, on the one hand, maybe you say it's stock more intensely, or maybe you could say it's something else, like Tamir was saying, that maybe we could say it's about simcha, and simcha requires giving, and that maybe that's a different kind of giving than stock in general, and therefore maybe it's a difference in terms of the standard of bedika. Okay, so we'll dive now, and we will continue tomorrow, and we'll be good things. All right, Ashrei.